Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
We're setting up a typical El Nino pattern right now with the storm track going further to the south, allowing the Midwest to dry out with warmer temperatures now. But longer-term forecasters still anticipate that we're going to see a pretty mild overall summer, which will help ease any potential moisture threats if they develop, if in fact forecasters and those models are correct.
Chief Commodities Economist with StoneX, Arlen Suderman. U.S. export inspections improved for the week that ended May 21st, led by stronger corn and soybean movement, as USDA inspected about 62.3 million bushels of corn, up from 55.1 million the previous week and above last year's 55.9 million. Corn remains well ahead of last year's marketing year pace. USDA is reporting year-to-date corn inspections 2.37 billion bushels, compared with 1.8 billion at this point last year. Soybean inspections, 21 million bushels, nearly even with the previous week and well above last year's 7.3 million. China listed for soybeans, totaling about 5 million. Speaking of shipping, grain shippers using the Arkansas River will need to plan around partial lock closures this summer. U.S. Army Corps of Engineers says 6 locks on the McClellan Kerr Arkansas River navigation system will be affected from June 15th through the end of September. Lock spanning from Fort Smith to Little Rock will close daily and then reopen overnight. Timing will matter for wheat, soybean, and corn movement, as last year 1.4 million tons of grain moved through the lock and dam 1 at the mouth of the Arkansas River, led by wheat and soybeans. Choice Select spread sending a different signal this spring as select beef becomes unusually scarce. Paul Dykstra with Certified Angus Beef says select carcasses have fallen from 12% of the fed cattle mix in December to about 8% since February. That tight select supply has kept the choice premium unusually narrow, and at times select has traded above choice. Dykstra says the shift reflects the rapid decline in select carcasses as the industry continues producing more higher quality beef. It's a positive long-term sign for consumer demand, more cattle grading choice, premium or higher, and showing the beef sector has responded to shoppers who want better eating quality. But the challenge, lean beef availability. Smaller coal cow harvest, fewer select carcasses will tighten supplies of lean-end meats and trim, which means will support imports and higher lean beef values. Well, California cherry growers facing major crop losses after spring heat and rain hit orchards during a short harvest window. California Farm Bureau reports San Joaquin County lost 63% of its cherry crop with estimated losses of $174 million. Damage started with an early heat wave that hurt fruit set in several orchards. And then April and May, storms caused splitting, decay, and shorter shelf life as fruit matured. It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
We continue to hear from the Trump administration how close we are to a deal, even hearing words like we're 95% there. And that may be true from looking at the bullet points of things that they want to negotiate, but that last 5% is significant.
Arlen Suderman is chief commodities economist with StoneX.
In fairness, what they're talking about here is not a peace deal itself, as I would describe it, but rather a deal to have a ceasefire for 60 days while they continue to work on that 5%. But that 5% is a pretty significant distance or chasm between the two sides. That 5% is largely about Iran being able to hang on to the enriched uranium that it's in possession of versus the United States wanting to see that enriched uranium either destroyed or removed from Iran or both. And it also wants to see the Strait of Hormuz opened up with no control of Iran over traffic moving through it, let alone fees on ships passing through it. And those have been non-starters from Iran's standpoint to this point as well. Iran really seems to feel like it's got the upper hand here, or maybe it just knows that its only way of survival is to delay, believing that eventually domestic and international political pressure will become so much on President Trump that he'll give in and allow them survival. The Revolutionary Guard knows that if the United States were truly to move in and put troops on the ground, that eventually they might be wiped out. But if they can delay and feign negotiations and maybe even, if necessary, reach an agreement that then requires the United States to withdraw its military forces, but then not keep the agreement, making it more difficult to re-engage those military forces once again. But the more they can delay and put pressure on the president to start giving in on some of these key points, that increases the possibility then that they can, in the world's eyes, recruit more followers and say, we stood up to the United States and we won. It matters not that their military has been decimated. They still have the capability to block ships moving through the Strait of Hormuz at this point. And that would probably take ground troops in order to eliminate that at this point. And they know it, and they know the political pressure is on President Trump. But President Trump tries to pass that off and say he's not in a hurry. He's got all kinds of time to negotiate, but that really kind of plays into Iran's hands as well. So we did see the commodity markets really break lower over the weekend and to start the new week after an extended Memorial Day holiday in the U.S. markets. We saw that sell-off in crude oil that's pulled grain and oil seeds with it. The market trading as if we're going to have a peace treaty, and that supplies of fertilizer and fuel, so to speak, will be restored right away. Even if we get a peace treaty signed today, even if the Strait of Hormuz were to open up today, which is extremely unlikely, I still predict that global supplies of fuel and fertilizer will get tighter before they get better over the months ahead. And so the market seems to be discounting that risk at this point.
It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
This is Agriculture Today.
So as a reminder, right, the changes that we made, we announced in November, but they didn't really go into effect until our Q2, the quarter that just ended. And so it's early through that.
Kurt Calloway is Chief Financial Officer with Tyson Foods, speaking recently at the BMO Global Farm to Market Conference.
The expectation was processing within our new footprint, right, which was designed for where we felt the cattle would be available in the future, not yesterday or not today, but the right size for where it needed to be. Closing one facility and taking one from two shifts to one was the move for us to make. Now, that enables us to run the available cattle in the industry in an environment where we can be absolutely competitive as anybody else, right? We're not going to control cattle costs. We're not going to control the ultimate cutout. But what we can do is operate with great efficiency inside our network. And it's early, right? But we're starting to see the benefits of that as we've moved into that footprint. Now, naturally, when you're in a transition period, while, yes, there's a date in which that happens, there's still, costs associated with it as moving things around or inefficiencies as you're running that activity. And so our third quarter will be the first point in which we're operating completely in that new footprint, and the expectation of being absolutely competitive in the industry is there.
No doubt the Packers are losing a lot of money in the beef sector.
While we're still in a loss situation, right, narrowing those losses in the back half of the year were apparent in our guidance for the back half.
Now, earlier, Tyson believed they were starting to see some heifer retention. Is that still the case?
It's still, I would say, spotty and regional, right? The pace at which perhaps some had forecasted before, hasn't picked up. Look, it's still going to be a tight cattle supply situation as we move through 26 and into 27. But as I said earlier, what we're controlling, and back to Donnie's mission for us to make sure we're controlling controllables, that's what we did with the footprint, and that's what we're executing, and we'll manage through in 26 and into 27, and we'll still manage in a tight cattle supply.
But the future outlook is improving. What will Tyson do with the additional revenue when it comes?
So happy to say, in addition to improving guidance for the year between 2.2 and 2.4 billion, we also raised free cash flow guidance for 2026 to $1.2 to $1.8 billion. Our CapEx has been in the range, as we've said, the entire year between $700 million and $1 billion. Our historical average is a little above that, more like call it 1.2. But I'll hurry on to remind everybody that, right, we spent a lot of capital over the last couple of years, right? We put a lot of capacity expansion in the network, built four domestic plants in the United States, built seven internationally, and we added a lot. And we've been working on certainly filling that up and operating with excellence, as Donnie mentioned earlier. But ultimately, our long-term expectation of leverage is at or below 2x. And at the end of our Q1, we hit 2.0x. Naturally for us, Q1 is we generate a little excess cash. Q2, we use a little cash, just the normal cycle. So leverage was at 2.2 as we finished Q2. But it's a very much a sweet spot for us. We have ultimate optionality and flexibility. And as you pointed out earlier in the opening comments, we've been very diligent paying down gross debt. $300 million this quarter, $1 billion in the last year, nearly $2 billion in the last six quarters, right? We've demonstrated a commitment to that, and we have a lot of optionality and flexibility. I'll just end, with our return cash to shareholders as well. We've returned in the first half of the year just under $450 million through dividends and share repos. I think it's a very impressive stat.
It's Agriculture Today.
The planting season is right around the corner. You can't afford to be down when it's time to go. Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, can get your equipment ready for the season and keep you running. We also have a great selection of new and used planters for the upcoming season. Depend on Wiley's 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Find us at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Our China desk continues to talk about adverse weather affecting their wheat crop, their winter wheat crop, which is approaching harvest.
Arlen Suderman is chief commodities economist with StoneX.
The maturing fields in the North China Plain in particular have been seeing some significant persistent rains. Now, to some extent, it mimics what we saw in 2023, when we had over 20 million metric tons of harvested wheat in China because of these persistent rains that was sprouting and therefore unusable for milling quality wheat and had to go into the feed stream displacing corn. At this point, the forecasters, our partners over at Commodity Weather Group, are anticipating we're going to see a drying pattern over the next 1 to 2 weeks. Some rains could return again in the 11 to 15 day period. We'll have to watch that. But right now, it looks like a drying pattern. That should reduce the risk somewhat. Right now, what we're hearing on the ground in China, that perhaps this year's damage might be 8 to 10 million metric tons of sprouted wheat. That's a prediction at this point based on the conditions they see. That would be about 6 to 7% of the total crop, which is expected to be over 140 million metric tons. So that's something manageable. All of this could play into, though, how much corn or wheat they may or may not buy as part of that $17 billion deal they agreed to on top of the soybeans they previously agreed to back in October. So we're going to be following that and kind of see as the harvest goes what the actual damage levels are. The higher the damage levels, the more likely we could see them use some of that $17 billion to buy wheat. The lower the damage, perhaps more likely to buy more corn. And so we'll be monitoring that. One of the things we'll also be watching is soybean purchases. This is the time of year when private crushers start locking in prices for the next marketing year. And typically that's U.S. soybeans, at least historically, it's been U.S. soybeans starting September into January, and then Brazilian new crop soybeans February on after that. They've purchased right now about 1.5 million metric tons of Brazilian soybeans for delivery in September and October, and about 3 million metric tons of new crop Brazil soybeans for early next in 2027. And so there's still plenty of room for more soybean sales right now. But keep in mind that this just shows that Brazilian soybeans are far cheaper than U.S. soybeans, even into next year. And so if there's going to be 25 million metric tons purchased, it's going to have to be by the state grain buyer Sinograin to go into a reserve. Oh, but the reserve is full. So that means they'll have to release it auction if they're going to buy it, displacing any purchases they may make from Brazil. But the bottom line is if they're going to do so, they need to start buying those soybeans soon to send that message to the private crushers that there may be cheaper soybeans coming out of the reserve that they purchased from the United States. Now, they probably wouldn't just immediately pass through. It would be older beans coming out of the reserve that are displaced by the new soybeans from the United States coming in. That's what they basically did with the 12 million metric tons that they purchased for this current marketing year. Will they do 25 million metric tons? I remain a skeptic. I certainly remain a skeptic, but they have kept their deal on the 12 million metric tons, so we have to respect that possibility that they may do so.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
So this week, we're excited to announce $65 million in the SIG program, Conservation Innovation Grant.
Colton Buckley is the new chief of the Natural Resources Conservation Service, NRCS.
We're going to have $50 million on SIG on-farm trials. So this is work directly with producers and partners to build out conservation implementation and kind of the next generation of tools to support American agriculturalists, as well as $15 million for SIG Classics. And since 2004, the agency's awarded over 2,000 projects, investing more than $600 million. Some of the recent project highlights include things like water quality improvements and drainage financing tools, mobile drip irrigation innovations, particularly in Kansas, cooperative nutrient management models in California, paddock track grazing measurement technology, and these projects contribute to NRCS practice standards, new conservation technologies, and measurable conservation improvements.
Innovation grants give partners another round of funding to test and expand conservation tools, and it's two-part.
So it's a two-part program, yes, sir. So there's Classic, which is the priorities this fiscal year are going to be water management, water quality, soil habitat improvement, and then there's actual on-farm trials for irrigation, water management, and technology, grazing land, soil health demonstration. So SIG is a program here at the agency that does kind of the research science implementation out of the Classic. We're looking at the trade schools, technical universities, land grants, nonprofits. Pretty much it's open to everyone except for foreign entities and governments to apply. And then on-farm trials are actual demonstrations on landowners' private property to support these new technologies and tools in conservation.
Buckley says this year's priorities for SIG on-farm trials.
So we're looking for things to support irrigation water management as we go through a rough drought throughout the country and have for a couple years now, in support of nutrient management and grazing lands to support the regenerative efforts that producers across the country are coming to the table to re-engage with, as well as soil health demonstration.
And water management, one of the top priorities for SIG Classic. In addition,
conserving ecosystems by managing pest pressure, support for healthy soil and habitat improvement, and then general farmer-focused conservation outcomes.
Buckley says through these conservation innovation grants, USDA is investing in the future of ag.
I mean, when we look at the average age of a farmer rancher in the nation, and over the next 15 years, we'll have the largest land transfer with a lot of new and beginning farmers or folks like me one day going back to take over the family place. We've got to make sure that the toolbox here at NRCS with our conservation practice standards are best up to date for direct producer implementation. And the way we do that in the early adoption system and developing these technologies to make sure that while it's science and data driven, it applies well on the landscape is through a conservation innovation grant.
Applications now being accepted on grants.gov, grants.gov.
Deadline's going to be, it's coming out this week, both for SIG Classic, SIG on-farm trials, and they'll be on grants.gov through July 27th of 2026.
Colton Buckley, the 19th chief of the NRCS. And this is Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
This is Agriculture Today.
So on the deficit numbers, we're tracking that. On the workers' wages, I think we have a more nuanced view on some of that.
U.S. Trade Representative Jamison Greer.
I think if you look at the last month or two, it's not where we want it to be. But if you look overall since the beginning of the Trump administration, if you look at manufacturing line workers, non-supervisory workers, those wages have gone up, right, by over $1,000. Comparative to the last administration, over 4 years net, they went down by $800. So we're looking all in. We're looking relative to where we were before. And we've seen a lot of progress on wages, particularly in manufacturing, which is where we're quite focused. And again, we're looking at real wages. So we had good inflation trends. Obviously, with the Iran operations, energy has changed the inflation picture for the last couple of months. But that aside, real wages have outpaced inflation over the past year, the past 2 months being exceptional for reasons we all know. And then with manufacturing as a share of GDP, that's been about the same. It's been about 9.5% for some time. This is the one where I would say we need time. All that being said, we've seen the right signals. So if you look at the last half of 2025, we saw manufacturing productivity at the highest levels it's been in a long time. We're seeing our imports, our import profile is now 40% capital goods. I know a lot of that is AI and all that, AI hardware, but that goes toward productivity and manufacturing too. As I'm going to factories, they're using AI to have force multipliers for their workers. And we did see manufacturing jobs at a net positive in the first quarter of this year, which is the first time we've had that in a while. So we're seeing a lot of demand signals for manufacturing labor, for construction starts and that kind of thing. So all the indicators are going the way we want them to go, but we do need time. You can't build a factory overnight. We're seeing pharmaceutical facilities, concrete being poured and superstructures going up in, North Carolina and Indiana and Southern California. We're seeing production lines come back. We're seeing excess capacity or unfilled capacity being used in the United States. So we're seeing those trends going the right way. And I do hope that we get that 9.5% higher to be more like the rest of the OECD, who has a higher portion of GDP accounted for by manufacturing.
But what are the goals?
I would say the goal is concretely the first one, have manufacturing have more of a share of our economy, because that means that we're making more, we're producing more, there's a lot more activity there, because we've had such declines in that, which we think is challenging for our national security. We certainly want more manufacturing jobs too, but I don't think we should discount the importance of manufacturing productivity. I mean, the way I look at it, when I look at the numbers from the past year, where manufacturing productivity is up, exports are up the highest they've ever been, and manufacturing wages, again, for the line workers, non-supervisory, those are up. The way to summarize that is we're American workers are making more and selling more and making and earning more to do it than they ever have. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how the manufacturing jobs numbers play out. Like I said, we've turned the corner. If you look at the there's a post-COVID bump, right? We went back up, and then that peaked in, I don't remember the exact month, but mid-22 or early 23, and then we saw a slow decline. And then last year, that decline kind of bottomed out, and in 1Q26, we've seen, again, net positive in manufacturing jobs. So I think we're going to see more manufacturing jobs, but it's going to come with increased productivity. So it might not be as many manufacturing jobs as we had, 20 years ago, but I think you'll see an increase.
It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
The planting season is right around the corner. You can't afford to be down when it's time to go. Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, can get your equipment ready for the season and keep you running. We also have a great selection of new and used planters for the upcoming season. Depend on Wiley's 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Find us at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.